Welcome to Healthy Her, the podcast designed to inspire women to lead lives filled with health and happiness. I'm Dr. Amy Brenner, your host discussing nutrition, hormones, aesthetics, sexual health, and more. Join us each week as we dive into feeling better, looking better, and living better. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Healthy Her. Today we're going to tackle one of your most common questions of aesthetic treatments, and it is problems with the eyes. And we have our aesthetic director in our practice, nurse practitioner Samantha Bauman here, and we're going to tell you all the things to make beautiful, sparkling, young-looking eyes. Okay.
Let's talk about it. So eyes are probably one of the most common, if not the most common, questions that we get here. You know, what can I do to help my under-eye wrinkles or the crepey skin? Dark circles, some people get under eye bags or they get hooded eyes.
What does that mean when you say hooded eyes?
Yeah, hooded eyes would be when the skin, and sometimes it's just due to laxity and age where it kind of just becomes a little droopier. Some people are naturally just how they're made, they kind of have that heavier, more tissue up here. And as you age, it gravity takes over and becomes a little bit lower, kind of covering part of the eyelid and not making someone's eyes look as open as they once did. I get it. Eyes are tricky because they are certainly what, you know, can make you look very youthful or can age you quickly. So I get why it's a concern for, you know, so many people.
Can also, if you have hooded eyes, just make you look kind of angry.
Yeah, for
or
sure.
Even sleepy.
Yes, absolutely.
And a quick, easy way to assess this is when people like don't have enough room to put their eyeshadow on or just their eyes look kind of small.
A great place to start is just doing a neurotoxin kind of crows. We also have a kind of a special treatment where we do what we call a brow lift. We can also use another technique that we're specially trained in, something, a name that's trademarked called Microtox, to kind of help give you a little bit of a lift around that brow and in the soft tissue and the muscle that's around the eye to kind of help make them look more open and awake.
So but Botox.
Botox so would be
Botox,
where I would
Dysport,
start.
Dysport, those kinds of things.
Correct.
Of what you mean by toxin treatment. Certainly there are some other ones on the market, but those are the two we use. The most common ones. Mm-hmm. And just a little heads up, how long does Botox last? About pricing to treat Botox around the eyes?
Botox lasts, we usually tell people, around 3 to 4 months. There's not a guarantee. There's a few people that are faster metabolizers and it might not last quite that long. Generally speaking, I would say 3 to 4 months is how long it lasts. We have special Botox days in our office where Botox is $12 a unit. Any other day of the week, unless you're one of our VIP patients, it's $13 a unit. Generally speaking, to treat your crow's feet, you're looking at about 12 units per eye. And then our brow lifts are somewhere between 3 to 5 units for a brow lift. Microtox definitely varies because we can also use some of that under the eye to help with like crepey skin or dark circles. But if I was just targeting someone to kind of help give them a brow lift to help with kind of hooded eyes, I would probably go somewhere in that 10 to 15, maybe 20 units in addition to what we've already done.
And can you explain what the downtime is of doing Botox for this type of concern, as well as any potential negatives? I would think the positives are there's really no downtime. Like, you're back to living your life the next day, and from a price standpoint, it's going to be probably the least expensive option.
Yeah, so you are right in saying there's no downtime. That is correct, unless there is a chance you can get a bruise. So for some people, that would, I guess they could say that would be downtime. Around the eyes is a very vascular area, so I would say of all areas I'm doing Botox, that's probably the highest chance of getting a bruise. But, you know, I feel like it's also pretty easy to avoid at the same time. So, but things happen. The downside to doing Botox is it does take a little bit of time to set in. So even though you don't have downtime with it, it's going to take, you know, probably 7 to 10 days before you start to see results and see whether or not that's, you know, did what you wanted it to do. And then we usually have people come back for a touch-up, especially if you're new to getting this done, just to make sure that they're happy and see if we need to add a little bit more, you know, to get the results we're looking for. But definitely a great option. Certainly, I agree. Price point wise, probably the easiest one to dive into from a cost standpoint, downtime, and results. One other downside to it would be that it's not permanent. So you have to get retreatment usually, again, every 3 to 4 months.
And for me, I felt like I was considering going down the surgery option about 15 years ago before I learned about Botox, before I started actually doing Botox. And I don't know if you would agree with this, but, you know, if somebody is coming in and has severe hooding of the eyes, Botox might not give them the relief that they're looking for versus I felt like with myself, I just needed like a couple millimeters of elevation. And so for that person that maybe just has mild to moderate lower brows, they would be a better candidate for that.
I agree completely. Yeah, there are some people where, you know, surgery probably is really their best and only option, but most of the time, you know, I feel like most patients we see, we can always get a little bit of improvement with a neurotoxin.
But would you say it's fair to say somebody can always try it? Like, there's no downsides of trying it and seeing if you're satisfied with the results that you can get from toxin.
I would agree with that. The only thing you have to be careful with is making sure that you have a good conversation with whoever's doing your injections, because if they talk you into doing your frontalis, which is a very common area to treat, it can actually make the hooding worse. So you do have to make sure that, you know, if that's a big concern of yours, that you need to have a, you know, open and honest conversation with whoever's doing your injections, because...
Yeah, because it's kind of like you can't have it both. Maybe you can explain, like, why you can't have it both, of how toxin works and what this muscle does and
so
kind
how
of explain the physiology.
The simple way that I explain to people is think of these muscles as an elevator. So whenever you put Botox in this glabella muscle here and in your crow's feet, it kind of acts as an elevator and raises up and kind of gives you that lift, that eye opening. It'll even help if you, when you treat them, these 11s, and like I said, the glabella or the procerus, it usually helps open up a little bit more in the medial eye, and then a crow's and a brow lift's gonna help a little bit more in the lateral. So the opposite happens whenever you treat this frontalis, which a lot of people like because they don't want all those static lines on their forehead. And I get it. I'm there with you. But that does the opposite, and it kind of acts like an elevator down. And so if you treat this muscle, then, and you kind of bring everything down, then that can kind of make some people's brow a little bit worse. So you do have to be very careful in... I should say, as an injector, you have to be okay with telling people, I probably shouldn't treat that muscle on you because it might make your eyes actually worse. I guess that's where a consult's important in having that conversation with whoever's doing your treatment.
Yeah. Kind of a side branching of that. If sometimes people will come in and say, I only want my forehead treated. And for most people, that would be a mistake because that can actually... lead to feeling heaviness if you didn't also do the glabella region.
Correct.
And so I think in our practice, you know, we don't have a 100% rule, but pretty strong feelings of we really don't like to just treat the forehead.
Yes, I would say if you see me, it is going to be a very rare circumstance that I will agree to ever doing that. But yeah, so there's a couple people that somehow get by with it, but I would never recommend it because like I said, that elevator analogy I like to use, this one brings everything down and then these muscles, when you inject them, lift up. And I don't feel like very many people want that heavy feeling or the look of being heavy. So that's why it's not usually recommended to treat that. So
yeah.
If you're someone with naturally hooded eyes, or you feel like the hooding is worse, that is an area that maybe you take off on your Botox treatment, or that you do a little bit less of. Because sometimes that's the trick too, is you can actually get a better brow lift if we treat a little bit less in this frontalis muscle, because then some of the muscles actually work a little bit harder and that helps you get a lift too. So it's a very...
It's complicated.
People that think that maybe Botox is easy, it's not as easy as it seems. It's certainly art and science to it. And
Anything else that could be an option for heavy or hooded brows or hooded eyes?
Yeah, so the other tools that we have in our toolbox here that, again, aren't surgical would be CO2 laser. I would say that that's going to help more for just like laxity that you would have in the skin to kind of help tighten that. That would be one option. The other one that I would say we could do is, or we have threads. And the threads are composed of, you know, a lot of times like polylactic acid, which break down, your body breaks down and then stimulates collagen production. And I think most people that are in the skincare industry or that are looking into skincare treatments have heard the word collagen. And we all know that that's what helps give us that youthful skin, the tight skin that, you know, we're looking for. And so when you have that skin laxity where the eyelid is kind of becoming droopy, those would be two other things that I would consider for that treatment.
Okay.
Because they're both going to help with skin tightening and collagen production.
Let's move on to the other area that you could, that's probably, I would say, everybody starts to get this as we get older, and that's just wrinkles or crepiness of the under eyes. And I think that's like when you look at somebody of really can define or give you an idea of how old they are. What solutions do we have for under eye wrinkles and creepiness?
Yeah, so that is definitely, I feel like everyone's concerned. Even people who look great are still concerned about their under eyes. I would, again, start with a neurotoxin. I would probably do the microtox starting out. The next option that I would go to would probably be a growth factor injection, whether it be, you know, PRP from your own, you know, blood where we spin it down and use the growth factors from your own blood, or from a lab that we can all, that's also available that we can use. Those are great options to just kind of, again, help stimulate collagen production, which then helps promote, you know, blood flow and, you know, kind of tissue. I guess you could use the word regeneration to give you a more youthful looking under eye. That would probably be my second pick. Other things, though, that we can do, we do have Morpheus. So if you have other skin concerns, that's when I usually go into Morpheus 8, which is a radio frequency microneedling and helps with skin tightening. So that can definitely help someone's under eyes. But I usually use that tool when I'm looking at more of a full face rejuvenation and not focusing on someone's, just their under eyes. Threads, again, would be another option. They're, again, these free-floating little threads. They literally are threads, but they dissolve. Your body breaks them down and, again, will stimulate collagen production, which will help with those under eye, you know, wrinkles and that crepey skin. A CO2 laser, again, is an option for there. As you can see, there's multiple. So I try to look at the person as a whole and see, you know, what other concerns they might have. To try to, you know, tailor their, I guess, treatment plan to what their needs are and what their goals and concerns, and obviously budget plays into this too, and get a very individualized plan. So that's where those consults that we offer are so important, because it's definitely not cookie cutter, and you know what applies to you doesn't apply to me, doesn't apply to the next person. So I'm just throwing out all the tools that we have in our toolbox that could potentially help. Yeah, I think those are would be the ones. The other one that's a no-brainer to me, and I always tell everyone that, you know, so much of, it's kind of like working out and dieting, you know, so much of what you do at home, doing good skincare, taking care of your skin with, you know, good medical grade products is obviously very important. So I am, you know, thinking eye cream is obviously a very, very important part of your skincare
and
routine.
And you and I agree that everybody should be using an eye cream.
100%. I agree.
A separate product that's specifically made for eyes.
Yes. I have an eye cream that I absolutely love. We sell it in the office. The Elastin Restorative Eye Cream, I think, is amazing. But if it doesn't work for you, we do have a few other eye creams here that we can talk about. We have an Obagi one, and I believe we still have Skin Medicas as well. So, again, we can figure out what goes with your budget, and you know, there's always rewards programs, I feel like, with every skincare line too. So there are lots of options out there. But yeah.
You know, my go-to is, I personally, for my regimen, like to do a Morpheus for my face once a year, a CO2 ideally once a year, although I have let some years slip. Yes. But I like to do the eyes twice a year. And the reason is, I feel like there's not as much downtime with that because you can really hide it. We can't be as aggressive around the eyes with the laser because the tissue is so thin. But I feel like the downtime of treating just the eyes without a full face treatment, you can really get away with kind of a weekend treatment of doing the eyes and then doing all of our things to enhance recovery of putting the growth factors there for even more enhanced effect. And also it helps with the recovery. And then we have these masks to help with the recovery. But then like do it over the weekend. Put some glasses on, put a hat on, and nobody even knows you had it done by the time you come back to work on Monday.
100% agree.
So that's my kind of little, here's what I do and I think it works, and minimal downtime and really being aggressive of treating the eyes.
Yeah, I agree. The only other thing I didn't mention that I'm really doing a disservice on is some people are great candidates for under eye filler. Yes. It is a little controversial. Not everyone loves it. I still think that it's a great tool in the toolbox for the right person. And I think that that's the important part, is knowing, you know, who's going to get a good result, who's going to be a good candidate. And
Yes, and you really have to go to an experienced injector for that, because out of all the areas, that's the trickiest one. It's the Goldilocks. Like, you can't get too much, and you don't want not enough. So finding that sweet spot is really important to go to the right injector.
Yeah, but it can make a huge difference. I mean, if you're a good candidate for it and, you know, what your under eyes look like. Yeah.
Then one other thing I just wanted to address is, if somebody comes in and is like, you know, well, I only have $100 and I need to fix my eyes, what are your thoughts on creams, whether you get it at our office or elsewhere, of if you're just going to use a topical product, what kind of results can you expect?
Well.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think they're going to be great. You know, maybe a small change, but yeah, I wouldn't expect, you know, anything earth-shattering for sure.
Yeah, I think where skincare products really shine is when somebody's really diligent about using them at a young age and staying out of the sun at a young age, or to maintain the results that you get from real treatments. But otherwise, I think if you're going to rely on skincare products to reverse decades of damage, I think it's going to take decades to see the results.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I just don't think, like, these skincare products will say, here's the before and after, and I just don't really see that in real life.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. It's usually, you usually have to do something else in conjunction with it. But they certainly work, and I think that everyone should do them. But again, I think it's a great start them young or do the treatments and then use them as maintenance to maintain your results.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, hope you found this helpful of all the things that we can do non-surgically for bright, beautiful, youthful, sparkling eyes.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Her. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a quick 5-star review on your podcast platform. Your feedback means the world to us and helps others discover our show. Do you have questions or want to discuss a particular topic? You can reach us by emailing ask@dramiebrenner.com or calling 513-204-8403 and leaving a voicemail. We might feature your question or comment in an upcoming episode, so don't miss out on the chance to be a part of the conversation. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. We appreciate your support and can't wait to have you back with us next time. Take care, and remember, your Healthy Her journey begins with you. This podcast is for general information only and does not constitute medical advice, the practice of medicine, nursing, or other healthcare services. No patient-physician relationship is formed. The information in the podcast and any references, material, or links are at the sole discretion of the listener and not meant to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should not delay or disregard obtaining medical advice for any medical diagnosis or issues that they may have, and should seek medical care or advice from their healthcare provider for any such conditions.